Solo episode again from me. And today I'm going to talk through three subjects: Bitcoin treasury companies and some recent news I've seen there and what it might mean, the idea of free banking, and a project that I'm seeing unfold at very close hand and something I'm very excited about. And lastly, how I create these solo episodes. So let me dive in. I saw a tweet over the weekend. Jesse Myers, aka Croesus, who has joined a company in Hong Kong as their head of Bitcoin strategy. And the tweet thread was, as usual, like, he's an excellent analyst, someone I really, I stop and I really consume what they're saying. And that's having followed Jesse, you know, from before he became a public Bitcoiner, when he was just an anonymous guy, Croesus. And I loved the story, right? It was like, okay, I went and did a management consulting career, and then I ended up at Stanford doing an MBA, and then I got bang into Bitcoin and was sitting as an anonymous Bitcoin profile, but very, very eloquent, highly educated, and just the kind of character that I take real notice from as an investor. And something you will have heard me speak about before, hopefully, is that, you know, as investors, we can cheat in some ways. It's not an exam where you're sitting in a classroom and if you look at someone else's notes next door, you're in trouble. It's like, what are people buying? Why are they buying it? How much of it are they buying? Did they sell? And often a lot of this information is public. And so with that, it's like, well, whatever Jesse's up to is interesting, purely on the back of having got big value from the work that he's put out as a newsletter, as a writer, as a podcaster, the businesses he's been involved in. You're like, okay, whatever that guy's up to, stop and take notice. Like, that's the first thing. And another good example of this, and interestingly on this Bitcoin treasury play, is Michael Saylor. It's like, okay, here's a guy that has devoted his entire life to building MicroStrategy. And, you know, went to MIT, literally a rocket scientist, ended up an entrepreneur and building software, and a highly skilled software and financial engineer. And you only have to spend 5 minutes listening to him on a podcast to know that, you know, A, serious skin in the game, like his entire life's work down the drain if he gets this wrong, but also just like an extraordinary pedigree of expertise combined with educational background. Now, obviously, Michael, probably double the age of Jesse, and they're different guys doing different things, but I can sit and say, they're interesting, watch what they're doing. And so when Jesse made this announcement over the weekend that he's going to join a business in Hong Kong called Moon, and that in his opinion, the creation of MicroStrategy as a Bitcoin treasury company isn't this one-off event. It's actually the birth of a new industry that literally didn't exist before. You couldn't be a Bitcoin treasury company if Bitcoin didn't exist. And it's taken over a decade and a half to get to a point where the technology itself is developed enough, where the regulatory environment that entrepreneurs are operating in has developed enough, the use case has got more and more relevant, and people are actually adopting this thing faster than ever before. Indeed, I've seen statistics that show that Bitcoin is being adopted faster than the internet itself. It's wild what's going on. But to recap, what is a Bitcoin treasury company? Well, there's been different forms of this, in my opinion, over the last, you know, 5 or so years. To take MicroStrategy as an example, and specifically for me, back in 2020, again, you may have heard me speak about this, but it's a genuinely life-changing moment for me. I watched a YouTube video called Bitcoin Infiltrates Corporate America, and it was Raoul Powell interviewing Michael Saylor. And it was a 2-hour long interview, basically like, who are you? What have you done? And he's like, well, I'm boom, 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 lists out of all of his credentials. And I think this is still true. He's the longest serving founder, CEO of a business listed on the NASDAQ, like an extraordinary statistic in itself, right? Founder-led business, still run by the founder, still majority controlled by the founder, still... Yeah, it's wild what he's managed to do. But what really caught my attention in that interview was, how do I know that 100 years from now, the manager of my company has the best chance of survival. And that was a lens that really spoke to me as someone who'd received an inheritance and wanted to make sure that the next generation and the generation after that got what I was given, if not more, right? How can I pass this through to the next generation? And MacroStrategy was the first example of a publicly traded equity that became a Bitcoin treasury business that I looked at very closely. And what does that really mean? Well, most companies that are traded on the stock market are traded based on their operations. So what do they create? Who do they sell it to? How much of that shit are they selling? How profitable are they? That is a business operation, right? It's not a balance sheet necessarily. And there's lots of different ways of valuing a company, of valuing an equity. But I would say that MicroStrategy was the first example of someone who's like, okay, I'm taking my treasury reserve, as it is described, basically their cash reserves as a business, and they reallocated the entire lot into Bitcoin. And I think his first major move was around 250 million US, that quickly got close to 400 million US. This is in 2020. It's like, hang on a second. So a stock-listed company run by someone that's devoted their entire life to building that has just bought as much Bitcoin as they could with their cash reserves with the intention to hold onto them forever. How many accountants would be involved in that? How many lawyers would be involved in that? Like, there's a lot of people that say, no, that's not possible. But he did it, right? And so I, as an investor, I'm like, whoa, this is really fascinating that that's even been allowed. And that was what really kickstarted my experience of like, okay, you own some Bitcoin, but it was a small percentage of the total portfolio. What is this thing? And, you know, boom, down the rabbit hole you go. Since 2020, you've then seen MicroStrategy just picking up speed. And I still don't own any MicroStrategy equity, to be very clear about that. But they have used a lot of different tools that are actually not very easy to acquire. And you could almost call it skills that are available to a publicly traded equity that I, as an individual, do not have. And so I saw a statistic relatively recently that showed that the average cost of debt that MicroStrategy has been able to get its hands on in the last 4 years is under 1%. Now, if I go to the private markets here I'm actually in Bali at the moment, but in Australia where I live, I'll get quoted 9.5% for a 12 to 18 month loan that's leveraged against a piece of real estate, right? A publicly traded company is getting it at 0.85%, I think it was. Absolutely wild how cheap that is. And they've been able to raise additional cash through debt, so issuing bonds, and they've been able to raise additional cash through selling equity. And it's mainly those two levers that have enabled them to keep accruing more Bitcoin. So after the first play of like, okay, well, how much cash have we got? We've got, you know, $300-400 million. Let's buy as much Bitcoin as we can. And then it was like, okay, well, how can we get more cash? Well, we could issue more equity. Oh, well, we could actually take on a load of debt. And there's been an extraordinary piece of financial engineering done in order to amass hundreds of thousands of Bitcoin at this point. And so exactly how they've done this, I'm not going to the details of it now. And again, I'm not an owner of MicroStrategy Equity, or as it's now called, Strategy. So go and do your own research, figure out if it's something that you actually want to be a part of. But what they've pioneered is something called Bitcoin yield. And so one of the difficulties that a traditional value investor will have is they're looking for yield on assets. And if they don't see a yield, they're like, how do I value it? And so a traditional value investor is unlikely to hold much gold, for example. They're like, well, it's just an asset play. I don't get any cash flow out of this. It has no yield. Therefore, to me, it's not valuable. And in some ways, you've got a yield play. And in other ways, you've also got a capital growth play. And what's interesting about this, it's like, okay, well, MicroStrategy can actually potentially give you both through the financial engineering that it's actually doing. And in some ways, I'm like, shit, I wish I bought some MicroStrategy like 4 or 5 years ago now. But my focus has been entirely on Bitcoin and self-custody. And where this now sits is like, okay, someone like Jesse, OnRamp was a custody solution. I don't know the story as to why he's no longer involved in that business. And now he's part of this company, Moon, that's based in Hong Kong. But what you're seeing is you're seeing MicroStrategy copycats. And so they are equities, so portions of a company that people are selling with the express strategy of like, we're going to take on Bitcoin in the same way that MicroStrategy are doing. So they're going to use leverage, they're going to issue equity, and presumably also some real world Bitcoin infrastructure to actually back that up as well. But in Japan, there's another company called Metaplanet that has done extraordinarily well using a similar strategy. There's the company that runs the Bitcoin conference, Bitcoin Inc. They have a private equity / venture capital fund called UTXO Management. And they have basically taken the MicroStrategy play and copied it with Metaplanet. And you're seeing other copycats pop up. I'm also an investor in a company called Matador. Shout out to Mark Moss in particular that helped me get involved with that. And I bought pre-IPO equity, which at 50 Canadian cents a share is very, very volatile, don't get me wrong, but has now got up to like, I don't know, 75 cents, 80 cents or something at one point. So it's starting to look really quite a promising investment that I've made. But the way that I looked at it is highly speculative, right? I don't know which one of these equities is actually going to necessarily be the winner, if there is a winner takes all. I think the obvious point is that these companies are able to, they're able to maximize returns based on geographical nuance. So one of the reasons Metaplanet has been such a success is because there's a load of cash that's tied up in a regulated space in Japan that wasn't able to access Bitcoin, that wants Bitcoin exposure, and in particular, Bitcoin yield. And so if equity is able to offer that, well, then happy days. And suddenly you've got bond traders that can get involved in getting Bitcoin exposure. Like a bond trader is not going to go and buy an ETF, but they can buy a bond off a publicly traded equity. I think the point here is that the Bitcoin treasury play is so early that we don't quite know what the right model is going to be, but there's extremely interesting demand from public market equity investors for similar businesses to MicroStrategy, to Metaplanet, to Matador. And there's others. Semler Scientific is another business I've seen spoken about highly. It kind of makes sense. And now Jesse's joined Moon. So you're like, oh, wow. What would an equity investment in Moon look like? Well, they're based in Hong Kong. I'm absolutely confident UTXO Management involved again there, that they're not choosing geographic locations by mistake, right? And it's like, okay, this is interesting. As an investor, how do I get involved? And it immediately made me think about the Australian stock market, so the ASX, like who's actually doing this in an effective way in Australia. And I have yet to see a good example of that. There's one company that was potentially publicly traded, but they don't look like the kind of team with the expertise that I'm looking for specifically. The idea is the Bitcoin treasury company industry is at its very, very nascent stage. And what might it look like in the future? I don't know. But when you see people that you respect, who you're able to leverage the choices they make to make your own decisions, well, you better take notice. So I for sure will continue to look for Bitcoin equity investments to make, like the one I made in Matador. Full disclosure, for me, it's still highly speculative. And so I much, much prefer Bitcoin in self-custody. You take on counterparty risk. To make my Matador investment, I was making a cash transfer internationally using TransferWise. It took a number of days. The cost was high. I then have to trust that if I contact that company again, I'll get my money back. Now, it's obviously a regulated entity trading through a Canadian stock exchange. You'd expect that to actually work if you went to get your money, but it's different, right? You own an equity in a company. It's not owning a piece of the Bitcoin network in self-custody. So my lens is quite simple. Like if I have an opportunity to buy equity in a business that Jesse's helping to grow, that gets exposure to Hong Kong-based capital that can't necessarily get involved in Bitcoin in any other way. And critically, it's that difference between, it's not just an ETF, it's actually Bitcoin yield. And that's the ability to basically leverage and also access other equity investors. So some things to really keep in mind, like obviously going back to the valuation process, like is MicroStrategy a good buy right now? Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. You know, value is in the eye of the beholder. That's absolutely true. So what ratio above net asset value? So if you calculate, for example, you see how many Bitcoin have they got on the balance sheet? What's the price of Bitcoin today? Okay, well, that's a very standard one-to-one ratio on the valuation of the business. But it should be worth more than that. And what multiple over that is actually a sensible position to enter that investment? Again, it's horses for courses. It will depend on individuals. It depends how speculative you're being. It depends how big a position it is. It depends how long the hold will be. All these different things come into play. For me, I think I'm looking at MicroStrategy as something that I would be interested to own in a small portion of my portfolio, and is a position I might enter about 12 to 18 months from now. If my timeline on the all-time high Bitcoin price for, you know, maybe in the next like 3 to 6 months is correct, I believe there'll then be a pretty horrible bear market for 12, 18, 24 months. And in that time, you're looking at how do you outpace Bitcoin? Like that's the hurdle rate, right? And that's where these Bitcoin companies are interesting, because, or these Bitcoin treasury co plays are interesting. It's like if you've made your Bitcoin allocation, okay, well, first of all, like making a 50%, 60% CAGR is unheard of, in particular with the level of risk that you're actually taking. Like in my view, Bitcoin self-custody is the least risky place you can have your wealth. So you're doing an incredible return already. Are you really going to spend a lot of time trying to actually beat that? In some ways, no. Just pack up, don't even bother investing, go and hang out with your kids, get fit, go on holiday, enjoy yourself. Whatever you might want to do with your time, go and do it. But if you have a bit of an itch for this stuff, like, okay, well, there's a new industry being born here. Like, what if you get in at the beginning? I heard a comment recently about Peter Thiel, being a famous investor from the US, founder of PayPal, but made all their money in Facebook. And so it's like, okay, well, Bitcoin's chugging away. Great. But like, can we outpace Bitcoin? And where might we do that? And a Bitcoin yield investment in a Bitcoin treasury company on a public market somewhere might well be a way of doing that. Now, what I like about it is liquid. Unlike early stage venture capital, if that business, you should be able to get your money out fairly easily, basically. And so what are the multiples that are going to be interesting? Well, I'm not really looking at that right now, because I think, yes, there's every chance that these Bitcoin treasury companies outpace Bitcoin in this short-term horizon. Mania, FOMO, something new, pools of capital that are locked up that can't access Bitcoin itself. Like, sure, maybe they will all, you know, jump in and really pump these equity positions. But there's going to be a bear market. And when that happens, like, how does a Bitcoin treasury company stay ahead of the Bitcoin price? Like, in my view, what will happen is these companies will spike up, and they might well outpace Bitcoin for a period of time. But as the Bitcoin like price drops back and there's then a bit of a bear, those equity prices are going to drop off a cliff. Like, I have to wait and find out to see if that's true. But either way, for those of us that are like, okay, Bitcoin allocation has been made, what else is going on? Well, this is a really, really interesting place to look. Am I going to start this kind of company myself? Absolutely not. I would like to invest in one. So if anyone is listening and has potentially got the skills and time to actually build something like this, then get in touch, because I'd love to help out where I can and with the capacity that I have. But there's going to be a lot of, you know, a lot of regulatory hurdles to get through. You'd have to be an excellent CEO of a publicly traded company before, I think, to even try to attempt doing something like this. And there'll be people out there like that, which is great. So, you know, let's get them involved. And hopefully this is a way to create more wealth, to improve the infrastructure that Bitcoin needs, to improve the adoption rate, and to just generally make Bitcoin stronger. Final point with all of this, and Jesse quite rightly points this out and didn't want to get drawn into this. If Bitcoin treasury companies are the product market fit that we're going to see over the next 5 to 10 years to really drive Bitcoin demand, because obviously they're buying Bitcoin, right, to sit on their own balance sheet. This is masses and masses of demand that potentially could come. Well, do you then lose the beauty of peer-to-peer digital cash? You know, if there's these big businesses that have got CEOs and management teams and regulatory environments to navigate, looking after all this Bitcoin, are they honeypots for hackers? Are they honeypots for the dystopian nightmare that could well develop with digital IDs and all the rest of it. Maybe, maybe. And so the key, I think, to that, at least for me at this stage, is A, it's not reality yet, but B, as long as Bitcoin remains a trustless, decentralized network that anyone can use if they choose to, then that's okay for me. It's the ability to have the choice to do it, which is the key. The analogy is like, you could browse online with a VPN, or you could choose not to. Like, you could choose to use Bitcoin, which has no KYC and is a totally untraceable account. As long as that ability is retained, then I think the beauty of Bitcoin will remain robust. And that's in spite of all of the extraordinary amounts of on-ramp to Bitcoin regulations, like all the KYC and AML stuff that modern governments required. They're basically tracking as much capital as they can as it enters the network so that they can, in theory, keep their surveillance business going of high tax. And let's see if it happens. Jesse, you may or may not be listening to this, but best of luck building Moon. I really love all your work, and thank you so much for what you've done in terms of teaching me about what Bitcoin is, and in particular, the article that you wrote about why the yuppie elite dismissed Bitcoin was one that hit home very hard and is still super relevant. It's ironic in some ways that the Bitcoin Treasury Co. play is the unfolding of that reality. It's the C-suite executives that are like, my life's actually pretty sweet, that are having to take notice of what is going on here. So super interesting. We'll see how that plays out. Okay, the next thing I wanted to talk through is this concept of free banking, which is something that's only come up very recently for me. And so let me give you an explanation as to the situation I'm seeing unfolding. So first of all, shout out to Max Hillebrand, who came on the podcast and just is awesome in terms of his insight on how Austrian economics actually functions. And he contacted me a few weeks later, said, you've got to get Hubertus on the podcast because he's building a really interesting product, BitCredit. And I'd love to hear your questions for him. So Hubertus joined me, and shout out to Hubertus for coming on the podcast. And he talked through, and by all means, go back and dig up these episodes. He talked through what BitCredit is. And I guess the precursor to that was I did a bit of research that Max sent to me, and the Austrian economists have always observed that the idealistic scenario of a fixed money supply is true, but to an extent. And the extent is that the liquidity or the elasticity of money is also required. And Hubertus has some content that you can dig up where I think this presentation was at Adopting Bitcoin. But it's about a 30-minute long presentation where he shows how a mini industry functions with a fixed money supply. And essentially, there's a cash flow problem when you're looking at primary resource production. And so very high level, it's like, okay, you've got to chop the wood down, then you've got to move the wood to somewhere else, then you've got to create the thing, and then you've got a product. And through that whole supply chain, the value that's exchanged en route essentially gets to a point where one of the participants in the chain, they don't have the cash flows in reserve to actually pay for the thing that they need. And so a fixed money supply does create problems when it comes to the functioning of a industry. And this is very business focused. And so what it's helped me learn about is this idea that, hang on a second, we're so used to the idea that there's a monopoly on money creation through central banking. But like, what if anyone could create money? Now, in some ways, the crypto market is that, right? It's people who can just create their own tokens. I'm the creator of this money. I can print as much as I want and, off to the races. It's a reincarnation of central banking in digital form. It's why it's so easy to compare the difference between Bitcoin and the rest of crypto, right? Bitcoin, no CEO, fixed supply, rules don't change, digital gold. Everything else in crypto, highly speculative software projects. But it's like, okay, what happens, and this is what BitCredit is designed to solve, is when a business adopts a Bitcoin standard and they have a fixed monetary supply and they're part of a supply chain, How do they pay their supplier if their buyer hasn't yet paid them? And it's really interesting problem that I simply wasn't aware of until coming across Hubertus. And it's awesome. It's a really awesome thing to think about. And in his view, the true adoption of Bitcoin has been held back by this problem. So we can never have a true Bitcoin standard unless there is elasticity of money on top of the fixed money supply. And again, go and have a look at some of Hubertus's content to get a closer view on this. But during the conversation, I have one of those amazing kind of light bulb moments, and only podcasting gives you this ability where you start to meet lots of people doing lots of different stuff and you can become a connector. And I thought about, oh, I know, I've got a friend called Ben. And I even said this in the podcast, do you know Ben Gunn? And he didn't, right? And so Ben tells a great story. Again, you can dig up his episode, go and find it. But he bought a piece of land in Wales in the UK, and it was he turned it into a forestry business. And to paraphrase like 5 years of his life, he realized that the best way to create value was to actually have a completely vertically linked supply chain of additional value at each stage. And so, sorry if I butcher this, Ben, but basically grow the trees, fell the trees, chop the trees into something that's actually useful, create something that's actually useful, and then sell. And so he started to create like roofing materials for buildings and has got an actual warehouse on site with a huge lathe that is chopping the trees up. And I was like, you should talk to Ben, because Hubertus needed a business case for a person who's already adopted a Bitcoin standard, but is in control of multiple business entities that are trading with each other. And so I created a Signal group, I introduced Hubertus and Ben, and oh my God, what I have since seen is epic, where there's just this, there's an energy of like, fuck, you've got a problem. Ben has got a problem. He's absolutely got a problem. Liquidity is his problem between his entities. It's like, they all need to pay each other, but they don't all get paid at the same time. And it's clearly solving problems for both parties. And so what I hope will come out of it is a prototype, essentially. And that's how this type of technology is developed, through connecting the right people at the right time who can then make progress. They'll try something, it won't work. They'll try something else, it will work. They'll iterate from the two of those points. And it's just like, oh, that's just pure magic, being able to introduce people that then start to immediately make progress for both of their like self-interests. But equally, the collaboration that's required to do that is part of the magic. So shout out to Max for the original intro to Hubertus. Shout out to Hubertus and his team for building BitCredit. And shout out to Ben for all the work he's doing with his forestry. It's absolutely epic. And I really hope that they can figure this out. And we'll see a pretty historic moment. I think I'll conclude this with like, being open-minded is such an important part of this journey. And when I first understood that like fix the money supply, yes, absolutely fix the money supply. But what we're talking about here is a difference between base money and broad money. And so it helps solidify in my mind, like, Bitcoin obsoletes central banks. And that's because it's going to give us a fixed monetary supply upon which we can build other financial tools. And so central banking enables a handful of people to print money out of thin air with debt that is not secured against anything, right? 1971, the US dollar was taken off the gold standard. It's super simple. Like, a dollar represents literally just faith in nothing, in my view. But the ability to peg credit against Bitcoin is very, very, very different. And so you'll have a very good picture on what is the current baseline money in the system versus what is the circulating credit. And I think that is going to be a complete game changer for finance. And take that a step further. It's like, okay, if you have a supply chain of businesses that all have a track record of trusting each other because they both need each other in order to exist, but equally they can grow together, make progress together, create value, why couldn't a business simply issue money itself? It's like, well, I know that you guys are going to turn up with the supplies that I need in 3 months' time because you've done it for 10 years and I have a really high trust in your service. And I know that the person that's buying my goods is definitely going to be able to pay for them in 3 months' time because they've done it for 10 years. Well, I, as the middleman, why can't I issue my own money? Now, it doesn't have to be dollars or euros or yen or whatever a central bank calls money. It could be some kind of receipt or certificate of trade or whatever you want to describe it. And that's really where BitCredit comes in. It's like a decentralized layer that requires lower trust, but you can issue your own money. You're like, wow, that would be unbelievable, because you're not going to issue your own money to someone that's not going to pay you back, right? The individual in the base case economic scenario is not going to take outrageous risk with their money. They're like, no, I can do this because I know you're going to pay me back. And they're going to have a much better view on the risk of that trade than six blokes that control the Federal Reserve, right? Oh, let's up the interest rate because, you know, why not? And that's obviously hugely paraphrasing the decision-making process they go through. But anyway, long story short, the innovation that's happening on top of Bitcoin is one of the reasons to be most bullish about this thing. It's like, why should you buy a portion of this network? It's like, well, you've got all these people now connected together by the base layer money that want to go on and build things that solve real problems. And this is just one example of that happening. And in particular, it's interesting because it was an area that I'd overlooked and has only come to my attention because of the podcast and these people that I'm now meeting and introducing. So absolutely love that. Great vibe. Point number three that I was going to walk through is the solo episode and how I actually do this, because I've had some really interesting feedback that it's not altogether that obvious. So what was the genesis for these kind of solo rants that I've started doing? Well, most importantly, it's kind of an organic process that has naturally evolved where, okay, I know that I want to do three episodes per week for the podcast. An hour each one, roughly speaking. But basically, people's lives are always changing, including my own. So even if with the best of intention and the most hyper-scheduled person in the world, someone might just say, look, you know, I can't do it today. And that's okay. I have released that to the universe and said, okay, sometimes it's just not going to align. That's energy. Be okay with it. Do not find it stressful. What's another way of looking at this? And it's like, actually, this is an opportunity for me to share and say, okay, well, this is what's going on in my life. These are the decisions that have been useful. This didn't work so well, whatever it might be. And it's extraordinary. I just kind of click record and I can talk like no problem about two or three things for 30, 40, 50 minutes. I even did my 50th episode split up into three. That was a 2.5 hour or something Bitcoin 101, 21 questions about Bitcoin for beginners. And why? Like, how can I sit there and actually do that? I don't know. It's kind of like I'm channeling something as I get going and all these different ideas come up and I'm able just to share what it means to me. And I think this is the fun process. So what I actually do is I sit down before clicking record and I just take a big deep breath and I meditate for a little bit of time. And I just wait to see what are like the three things that I want to talk about. And I write them down in my little notebook down here and click record and off I go. It's very, very simple. Now, in terms of feedback, like I've got Michael and Pat, my producer and editor, shout out to both those guys for their support and work so far. It's been awesome building the team that we are. Most recent feedback, Michael was like, your last one was probably my favorite yet. The macro stuff's really interesting. We can, you know, certainly have titles that are focused around that. But equally, the feng shui kicker at the end was really unexpected. And just, yeah, he really loves it. You're like, wow, that's great initial feedback. But then equally, Pat was like, oh, well, I felt like some of it was a bit of a recap. And you're like, great. I'd love also to get negative feedback. And so that's what I wanted to go through here was like, do you guys, as the audience members of this podcast, find these solo episodes useful? And what could I do better? What do I not do well enough? Two ways of saying the same question. Or what do you like? Should I create more of it? The research that I do, all the reading, and the other podcasts that I work through, that I'm then able to just distill it in these like 30, 40 minute long conversations to myself. It's like I'm just iterating on my own thought process. And that's literally all I do. So yeah, anyone that's been you know, recently tuned in and just found this podcast, or if you've been listening along for a while now, my email, hi@jakewoodhouse.io. If you've got anything you want to share, then just get in touch. I'd love to hear from you. And in particular, like, are these solo episodes helpful? Would it be better, for example, if I was like more prepared and I had some slides and lots of data points and like it was more of a presentation, essentially? I could go in that direction. Equally, like, this comes very naturally to me. It's why also I've been able to kind of get over the fear of public speaking and start doing MC stuff that, you know, only a few years ago I would have been like, no way, I'm not doing that. And then suddenly you find yourself on stage introducing all sorts of different people from around the world in different locations. And I can do the same thing. It's mad. I can just literally just walk on stage and start talking and it just kind of comes through. You can have this whole long list of stuff prepared and you forget half of it. And that's totally okay, because you just weren't meant to mention that stuff. So it becomes almost a bit of a spiritual experience. I'll leave that there. It's it's just so interesting to me how things develop organically, and it just really gives credence to that idea of like action leads to clarity. And you just got to do some stuff and then see what happens. And even 12 months ago, before I started launching this podcast, the idea I'd be doing solo episodes to a podcast audience, just riffing on stuff that I only need one bullet point for, like, I just would never have expected that to happen. But people seem to find it valuable. And you're like, oh, wow. Well, how cool is that? Anyway, thanks so much for your time. Reach out if you have any questions, and really appreciate your support and attention. Thank you.